Good afternoon, ladies and gentlemen, and welcome to the PAION AG conference call on the financial results of the first nine months of 2015, hosted by Dr. Wolfgang Zünggen and Mr. Abdelghany Omari. For the duration of the call, you will be on listen only. However, at the end of the call, you will have the opportunity to ask questions. If at any time you need assistance, please press star zero on your telephone keypad and you will be connected to an operator. I am now handing you over to Ralph Penner to begin today's conference. Please go ahead.
Thank you very much for your kind introduction. Ladies and gentlemen, thank you very much for joining us for PAION's earnings call on the financial results of the nine months of 2015. My name is Ralph Penner. I'm PAION's Director of Investor Relations, and I'll be moderating today's call. I'm joined by Wolfgang Zünggen, PAION CEO, as well as Abdelghany Omari, our CFO. Within the next half hour, we are going to highlight some of the Q3 achievements, give details on the financial results, highlight the most important events, and provide a pipeline and strategy update and financial outlook. After this initial presentation, we'll be happy to take questions. I would like to point out that the slides for the presentation can be accessed by webcast in parallel to this conference call. The webcast details have been posted to the investor section of our website and were also given in today's press release. If you have not already opened the webcast link, you may want to do so now. This conference call is being recorded, and the replay will be available later today. The MP3 to access the replay will be posted on our website too. Before we get started, I would like to remind you that today's call may include forward-looking statements and that actual results may vary from PAION's current anticipations. I would also like to refer to the disclaimer included in the presentation slides. After these initial remarks, I believe that we should start right on with the presentation. Wolfgang, please go ahead.
Thank you very much, Ralph. Hello, everybody out there. I would like to start with a brief overview of PAION AG for those who are not familiar with the company. We are a specialty pharma company with a focus on anesthesia products, and this is focused on one product, remimazolam, which has the potential for three different indications, and we are in phase III development for two of them. We already have six regional partnerships with national champions in China, South Korea, Canada, Russia, Turkey, and the MENA region. We currently have approximately 30 people on board, and we have our headquarters in Aachen and subsidiaries in Cambridge, U.K., and New Jersey, U.S.A. At the end of the period, we had 41 million cash and cash equivalents on board, and Abdel will give you an overview in the next couple of minutes. As you are aware, we have a change in the management. My wife and co-founder has left the company to the 1st of November, and we today announced that we have hired a CMO who will be part of our executive committee and reporting directly to the management board. We are listed on the Frankfurt Stock Exchange. Our market capitalization right now fluctuates around 150 million. We have a pretty good liquidity, and the share price, as I last saw it, was €2.17. I would now like to hand over to Abdel to give you an overview of our financial situation.
Thank you, Wolfgang. Good afternoon, everyone. Ladies and gentlemen, now I would like to guide you through the financial key figures for the first nine months compared with the previous year and also give an outlook for the full year. Let me start with the P&L. As expected, there were no significant revenues in the first nine months of 2015 as we concentrated on the development of remimazolam. The revenues in the prior year period mainly resulted from license agreements for remimazolam. On the upper right-hand side, you can see that research and development expenses increased significantly from €6.9 million in the first nine months of 2014 to €20.9 million in the first nine months of this year. This increase is according to plan and mainly results from the preparation, initiation, and conduct of our phase III programs in the U.S. and Europe. Now let's take a look at general administrative and selling expenses on the lower left-hand side. Compared to the first 9 months of 2014, these increased by 1.8 million euros to 4.5 million euros. This is mainly due to the increase of staff and the conduct of market research, pre-marketing, and market access activities. In total, this results in a net loss of 20.4 million euros compared to a net loss of 6.3 million euros in the prior year period. Now I would like to move to the selected balance sheet items and an overview of the headcount on the next slide. Total assets decreased by 17.3 million euros compared to end of December 2014. This mainly results from the expected reduction of cash and cash equivalents. As you can see on the upper right-hand side, cash decreased by 18.4 million euros compared to end of 2014, which almost completely relates to cash flows from operating activities. As you can see on the lower left-hand side, equity decreased accordingly by 19.5 million euros to 43.1 million euros. The equity ratio was 87.5%. Staff development is illustrated on the lower right-hand side. Compared to an average number of 17 employees in 2014, we increased staff to 28 employees on average in the first 9 months of this year. Finally, I'd like to give an outlook for full year 2015 on the next slide. For the purpose of comparison, you can see the actual figures of financial year 2014 in the left column. For the rest of this year, our focus remains on the phase 3 development programs in the US and Europe. Therefore, we do not expect significant revenues, and we expect research and development expenses to increase significantly to approximately 27 to 30 million euros. General administrative and selling expenses are also expected to increase and will amount to about 6 million euros in 2015, mainly due to higher selling expenses. Based on the estimate for the R&D expenses, we expect tax credits in the amount of approximately 5 to 6 million euros. In total, we therefore expect a net loss of 27 to 29 million euros for this year. Our cash at hand of 40.5 million euros as of 30 September this year is sufficient to conduct the ongoing phase 3 programs. In order to allow the immediate commercialization of remimazolam after a possible market approval, we have initiated measures, especially including establishment of a supply chain and securing pre-production of market material for the launch phase. In order to be able to complete these measures and for compiling the filing dossier for Japan, we will need further funds of approximately 10 million euros during the next years up to approval. Thanks so far. Now I hand back to you, Wolfgang.
Thank you very much, Abdel. Just a brief pipeline overview for those who are not familiar with the company. Essentially, it hinges all around remimazolam. As I mentioned before, we have three different indications. We have completed a phase 3 program in Japan. This is why we are having a pre-NDA meeting at the beginning of next year. We are in the middle of phase 3 for general anesthesia in Europe, and we have an active ongoing phase 3 program in the U.S. for procedural sedation. ICU sedation, we will attack again once we have approval for the first indication. So that's coming later. GGF2 and M6G, there we have no active involvement, and these projects also do not have a significant impact on our income or the valuation of the company. Now, let me briefly run through the events in 2015. So in March, we started the first phase 3 trial in procedural sedation for colonoscopy. We then, in June, started the second U.S. phase 3 trial, and this was followed by the announcement that we have completed the tech transfer from Ono. And in August, we started the phase 3 trial. And finally, in October, very positive news from Japan. We received positive feedback from the PMDA about the remimazolam production for Japan, meaning that we do not have to set up a second production line for the Japanese market. On the talent-wise, we have been able to add Dr. David Bernstein as a medical advisor to Pion Inc. The same applies to Tim Morris, So we really have very well-established people on board in the U.S. My wife announced in July that she's going to leave the company, and in August we have taken on board Jürgen Rath as a COO, who is now fully engaged in doing everything that's needed to be launch ready. Now let me talk a little bit about remimazolam as is. It is an ultra-short acting anesthetic sedative. We have more than 1,000 volunteers, patients on drug, and we are right now in the execution phase of the two phase three programs. We have significant time once the product is launched to exploit this with a minimum assumption 2027, and we see attractive peak sales for each of the three indications, which should be in the order of 500 million worldwide per year. So what is so special about remimazolam? It is a member of the benzodiazepine family, and the big, and this is significant, difference is that it is metabolized not in the liver but by tissue esterases. And the second part is that it is then transformed into an inactive metabolite. And this leads to the ultra-short acting IV properties. Ultra-short meaning very rapid onset and very rapid offset. We also have the possibility to reverse the action of remimazolam with flumazenil. So what we have seen so far in those more than 1,000 patients, we have seen very good efficacy and safety in the studied populations. We have confirmed repeatedly the rapid onset and offset, and we also know that with remimazolam you can titrate the patient to the appropriate depths of sedation. And most of all, and that's becoming more and more a topic in anesthesia, we have shown superior hemodynamic stability versus the current gold standard. The two indications that are now in phase three, procedural sedation, have different target patients and target physician groups, and they are also different between the U.S. and Europe. So in the U.S., we are going for procedural sedation as the lead indication, where we position the remimazolam versus midazolam. In general anesthesia, which is the lead indication in Europe, we profile remimazolam against propofol and volatile gases. Now, what is exactly the program that we have completed and what is ongoing? So in procedural sedation, we have altogether four trials performed in the U.S., including the first-in-man trial up to the phase 2B trial, which was the basis for the discussion of the protocols for the ongoing phase 3 program with the FDA. In general anesthesia, initially our partner, then-partner Ono, started a program in general anesthesia by first confirming the short on and offset in a phase 1 trial and also confirming that Caucasian white people, black Africans, and Japanese people have the same pharmacokinetic and pharmacodynamic, which is a very important finding because that leads to the fact that, for example, the European authorities accept the ONO phase 3 trial as part of the pivotal program that saves us to conduct one additional phase 3 trial in Europe. So we have performed a phase 2 trial in Germany with the mission to essentially confirm the dosing that was used in the Japanese phase 3 trial. And the data show that we can use the same dose in cardiac surgery patients and in Caucasians compared to those patients treated in Japan. That was a very important finding, and that allows us now to go to filing with one phase 3 trial in Europe. So what is ongoing? The procedural sedation program has two pivotal phase 3 trials, one in colonoscopy, one in bronchoscopy. The second study in bronchoscopy was necessary because the FDA said there will be off-label use if we don't go for a label to use it in all procedural sedation situations. So the bronchoscopy patients have been identified as a group with a higher risk of having side effects to sedation. And therefore, this is part of the program.
In parallel, we are also performing three phase one studies to confirm certain aspects of the metabolism and the behavior of the drug. And finally, we are planning to perform a study in ASA3-4 patients in colonoscopy. ASA3-4 means patients with severe comorbidity, so these patients are mostly treated in hospitals, which is not our target population, but again, for safety reasons, those patients have to be studied. The program in Europe is a little bit more simple. It is just one phase three trial where we essentially target the same patient population as in the phase two, namely cardiac surgery patients, and this study has started in August 2015. As I said before, we are looking for different lead indications in different territories. And this is mainly driven not by the science, but by the commercial aspects, because different territories have different reimbursement situation and different opportunities. In the U.S., the target is procedural sedation, because there is one very important indication in the U.S., colonoscopy screening, with 20 million patients being screened outside the hospital every year. Colonoscopy is fully reimbursed because it has been shown that it can reduce the occurrence of cancer. And colonoscopy is the only means not only to detect but also to prevent cancer. And therefore, there's a continuous growth in that market. Our most recent numbers showed that there's an approximate growth of 3% in the colonoscopies being performed in the U.S. Now, let's have a little bit of a closer look into this market. Midazolam is still the mainstay of usage in the U.S. Midazolam is also a benzodiazepine, and therefore we identified this as our comparator for the phase three. And the other gold standard is propofol, and this is mainly used in situations where the cost for the anesthesiologist is being covered by the insurers, and midazolam is mostly used in situations where the insurers do not pay for the additional cost of the anesthesiologist, and this has some implication, which I explain further in this presentation. So what is this market? This market is essentially without any innovation for the last couple of years. There's only one other compound in phase one development, but we don't know whether it's even competing for this market. The quality of the patient experience is very important, so it's not only new for the physician, it's also important that patients get what they want. They want to be deeply sedated, at least so far that they don't recall what happened, and they want to be sure that it's safe to be used. And therefore, we think that with remimazolam, we have a very good alternative to offer for current medication. On the next slide, you see how we compare to midazolam. So midazolam, as I said before, is also a member of the benzodiazepine family. It's given IV, and it's given by the proceduralist or the nurse that's assisting the GI doctor in that situation. So that will be the same with remimazolam. So we plan to have a similar application so that there's no retraining necessary from that perspective. And the advantages are due to the different metabolism of remimazolam. As there's no active metabolite, patients will wake up faster and can be sent home faster. That's the expectation. And this leads to directly interesting benefits for those who do the procedure. On the next slide, I just try to illustrate to you what the reversibility with flumazenil means. So on the upper part of this graph, you see a purple line which reflects the status of sedation of a patient. At 5, the patient is fully awake, like we all around this telephone. And at 0, the patient has lost consciousness and is not to be waken up with any strong painful stimulus. So when these patients, after 3 minutes, get flumazenil, they wake up within 2 minutes. You see this purple line going up to 5 again. And if they do not get the reversal agent, you see that it takes some time longer before they wake up. And the important part is that in this red area, there would be the problem that if patients stay there long enough that they get into respiratory distress. And this may happen with agents that do not have a reversal agent. Therefore, this feature is very important. On the line below, you see a measure with EEG that with an initial bolus and followed by top-ups, we can keep the patient sedated comfortably for up to 30 minutes. And this is the dose regimen that we will use and has been tested in the phase 2B, of which I show you the headline results. We compared three different dose regimens with remimazolam to midazolam in order to fine-tune, not to find a dose, but really only to fine-tune the dose. And you see that all of these three doses were better than midazolam. And if all groups of remimazolam were pooled together, there was a statistically significant superiority to midazolam when it comes to response definition. And we are now using the 5 milligram plus a little smaller top-up dose for the phase 3 based on these results. Now, how does this transfer into the business case? If you're able to reduce the time per procedure on an average basis, that means that a doctor who does 10 procedures per day can improve that to 2 more procedures per day, and if he's doing 20 a day, it transpires into 5 more procedures. And this will add immediately to the efficiency of the unit or to the fact that maybe everyone in the unit can go home at 5 o'clock, which is also a very important consideration even for hardworking physicians. And I can assure you there has been a recent publication on propofol being used for this so-called Sedasis system comparing to midazolam. They came up with exactly the same time, 6 minutes difference on average. So that gives us a very good benchmark against propofol as well, although our primary target will be midazolam. Now, if we look at the reimbursement situation, for European eyes, this may be very expensive, but this is the current situation in the U.S., that outpatient reimbursement for one colonoscopy varies between $800 and $1,200. That is without the copay of patients. That sometimes also is significant. And so you can make your own calculation. If you can do 2 more procedures a day, what does it mean for the income of the respective unit? And we also are seeing a very strong trend towards a bundle. That means this blue bullet above this table, future bundle. That means that the payers will negotiate, even with individual institutions, how much they get for a procedure that will include all the costs. That includes the cost for the anesthesiologist, the cost for the drug, the nurses, the room, and everything. And this is a trend that's picking up very strongly. We heard it when at the ACG Congress in Honolulu, that essentially every GI doc who runs a large practice is planning how to deal with the future bundle. And a lot of them think that they have to switch back from propofol to midazolam, and therefore they're very keen to see remimazolam being on the market rather sooner than later. Slide 26. Just a brief overview over the 2 phase 3 trials. They are placebo-controlled, which for some people is a stunning statement, but this was a request of the FDA, and as they are our primary customer, so to say, we, of course, accommodated that, and we added in a midazolam arm in order to have a safety reference point. Same design for the bronchoscopy, again, placebo-controlled. And just for those who get worried when they heard a placebo-controlled bronchoscopy, of course, no one pushes a scope or a bronchoscope into those patients. If they get placebo and are not ready to be the procedure to be started, they eventually will be put on rescue medication in order to provide them with a safe and non-painful procedure. The additional safety study I already mentioned, as well as the phase one studies. We also have agreed with the FDA that we will evaluate how this drug performs in pediatric patients, and this will happen after filing. And our primary goal is to get the same label as midazolam. So in summary, the U.S. business case is based on the indication procedural sedation and getting the same label as midazolam. This leads to a very attractive NPV, and we are, based on this, also evaluating all financing options for Pion Inc. In order to be able to market this alone. But of course, we are also discussing specifically here the hospital business with potential partners. Now let's switch to Europe. In Europe, our lead indication is general anesthesia, and we think that the general anesthesia in surgical intervention represents around 30 million patients per year opportunity. And this is based on the fact that not all surgeries are done with general anesthesia, so we really focus this down. I recently saw another presentation by another company claiming that there are close to 60 million anesthesias per year. I think this is approximately twice as high and twice as wrong. We have further characterized the patients where we see an immediate medical need, and these are the patients with an ASA3-4. That means patients who are sick and have certain comorbidities. This is a specific reference to either cardiovascular or respiratory diseases. So that our initial launch target population is 14 million. This may sound not like a lot, but I can assure you that for specialty pharma indication, 14 million patients per year is quite a substantial number. Now let me briefly summarize the results of the phase two and phase three studies in general anesthesia. The phase three study in Japan was a propofol control study. We showed 100% of success. That means remimazolam worked as an anesthetic, and also we could show, as expected, that remimazolam has a much better hemodynamic stability profile as compared to propofol, which is indicated by the number of blood pressure decreases reported as an adverse event. In general, remimazolam was well tolerated, and the assumption that was presented also at the recent ASA meeting, that is the largest anesthesiology congress, we presented those data, Dr. Sato from Japan, and there was consensus that these data are really marking a big step ahead in order to provide patients with a drug that has less hemodynamic complications. And we have a similar finding in the phase two study that we did in cardiac surgery patients, where we compared to propofol sevoflurane. Again, the success rate as good as propofol, and we also showed an improved hemodynamic stability by the need for less vasopressor therapy. Let me explain why these seemingly different results translate into the same message. The lower use of vasopressors in the cardiac surgery patients essentially is comparable to a situation where you drive from here to Munich, from Aachen to Munich, and you use less gas. So, you make the same distance, you bring the patient through this, but you need less interventions to keep the patient stable. And so this is essentially the same as in the general surgery group, where usually anesthesiologists are less concerned about blood pressure drops. So here we see the blood pressure drops that we do not see in the cardiac surgery population. But essentially it's the same message. And again, this was confirmed in the discussions at the ASA, where we also presented new data of the phase two study. So finally, how do we are we moving forward? So we are performing the phase 3 study, again, in cardiac surgery patients in several countries in Europe, 530 patients. It's a head-to-head to propofol, so no gas involved in this study. We started in August and expect the results in 2016. And it will be the same endpoints as in the phase 2. There will be efficacy as an anesthetic, and the secondary endpoint is hemodynamic stability measured with the use of vasopressors required to keep the patient stable. Now we come to the Asian-Japanese strategy. As you know, probably Ono returned the rights to PAION earlier this year after they announced this in October last year that they are considering not to file. We have completed the know-how transfer in the meantime, and we are now pulling together the data from the vast clinical trial program and preclinical program that they have done. We are in the lucky situation that we were essentially invited for a pre-NDA meeting. So we are putting together the dossier at this moment, and we are expecting to meet the PMDA in the first quarter of next year. And our assumption is that we then can go on to filing, potentially with slightly additional evaluations that they may want to see, but there's also a chance that we can go directly to filing, so that there is a chance that remimazolam would have a first approval in Japan. This is very important, and it's also important from the Japanese perspective, because the Japanese authorities have given a priority to have first approvals in Japan. And obviously, remimazolam is on this list, and that's a kind of a compliment because it's not originating from a Japanese company. But still, to have this in the market first gives you an extra add-on in your pricing discussions. So this is a very important meeting that we are facing in the beginning of this year. Now, in summary, we're in the middle of phase 3 data, and therefore please excuse that we not can give you a new status of the program every day. It's our policy to announce when we start and essentially also when we finish. Anything that's unexpected will be reported, of course, but so far it looks like we are grosso modo on plan. We are very active in our pre-marketing and market access activities. We are currently assessing the necessary work and the potential if we would file both in the U.S. and Europe ourselves, and we think that's a very attractive business case. So the next step in manufacturing is to validate the manufacturing process. You remember last year we have produced the so-called registration batches. Now we need to confirm that in the next campaign. And so this is an extra exercise. The establishment of a supply chain, stockpiling in Japan activities will cost us approximately $10 million over the next 2 to 3 years. And because we believe in the prospect of remimazolam, we have even started some of those activities. And with respect to partnering commercialization, as I said before, we are looking both at independent commercialization and partnering strategies in Europe and the U.S., but the focus is quite clear on our own commercialization. In Japan, we will be able to give a statement on when and how can we file in Japan after the meeting with PMDA in the first quarter. So I think that's the next probably big valuation inflection point. And in all other regions, our partners are continuing their activities, and this also is on plan. But as we have said previously, a lot is also hinging on what's happening in Japan for some of these territories. And, of course, we are in discussions continuously with interested parties on ranibizumab. So to in essentially, let me finish with a wrap-up. So ranibizumab is a great opportunity to change current practice in sedation and anesthesia. I usually like to compare it to the iPhone over the old phones. So it's still a phone, but it's different, has different properties, and is therefore will be used more than the old stuff. And we think that we have alternatives both in the efficiency and in the safety versus existing products. The market essentially says by itself there is no need because it seems to be saturated. But this is essentially because anesthesiologists have started to believe that there will be never an alternative to propofol, and we will change that. The currently ongoing phase 3 trials are expected all to read out next year, and so that filing is planned for 2017. And next to the two ongoing indications, there's ICU sedation with a great potential, and of course, we also plan for use in pediatric patients. So for now, I would like to thank you for your attention, and we look forward to receive your questions.
Thank you. Ladies and gentlemen, if you would like to ask a question, please press star 1 on your telephone keypad. If you change your mind and wish to withdraw your question, please press star 1 again. You will be advised when to ask your question. Thank you. So our first question comes from the line of Christian Glennie from Edison. Please go ahead with your question.
Hi, good afternoon, gentlemen. First question on the phase 3 program trials ongoing both in Europe and the US. Can you just talk a little bit about obviously the nuance within the fact that the obviously the initial recruitment was moderate, but obviously the overall timeline for expecting for completion of recruitment to be largely on track. Can you just provide a bit more information on that side of things?
Well, it is not unexpected that it always takes time to set up a trial and get it running to full speed. I always compare it to an oil tanker. So it takes a long time until they have high speed on the ocean. And then finally, sometimes when you have to stop them, they continue to roll. So what that means is essentially that the biggest problem is that, number one, negotiations with administrations these days have become a piece of art because hospital administrations want to get a big cake of the costs that are involved in performing such a trial. So that takes a very long time sometimes. Sometimes these institutions have expectations that they can generate IP on this, so that's another discussion that sometimes takes several weeks and months. And thirdly, since these trials are not run in the mode like you run your normal practice, it always means much more work for the sites to get a study done because they have to do much more documentation, and they have to do much more monitoring of the patient because the agencies expect a lot of additional data that you do not do in your routine. So sometimes after the first patient, the site is disappointed because they feel overwhelmed by the amount of work. So then we have to go there and retrain them and give them comfort that that other sites can do what they have problems with. So this is the normal process in a clinical trial. And we are working on this, and in the meantime, you know, a lot of these sites getting more comfortable in using the drug, and so the recruitment rate is almost there where we want it to be.
Okay, thank you. That's helpful. Then just on the Japan side of things, is it fair to say that in terms of further discussions around partnering, obviously to replace the likes of Ono in Japan, that in reality the trigger for that is the, is that pre-NDA meeting with the authorities there that then gives you a path forward that then you can properly re-engage partners, or is there a chance that, that actually a partnership potentially comes sooner?
Well, I think you're right. To assume a partner before that meeting is not, has not a, a very high likelihood, unless someone is willing to take a certain risk in order to outperform competition, because there is competition. But I would not count on that. So we are personally believing that a partnering decision will happen only after the PMDA meeting.
Sure, okay, thank you. And then just my final question, whether I know that obviously you've got various other partnerships in place, and I know that obviously it's tricky sometimes in terms of getting what you can say about the other partners in terms of what they say about progress with their programs. Is there anything else you can comment on in terms of how some of these partnerships in some of these countries is progressing, or provide a bit more information on that side of things?
Well, first of all, I have to say that the what can we communicate about what these individual parties are doing is their decision, and we have to respect that. On the other hand, they are doing what we have agreed between them and us in order to prepare their own filing. This sometimes involves own clinical work, and sometimes it only involves to discuss with the authorities whether they can use the file that they receive from us. So all of these activities are ongoing. I can tell you that, for example, from one country, because remimazolam is on the high priority list for this country, the agency wants to do an inspection of our production site. So all these are all activities which are ongoing, but it's at the discretion of these partners to make announcements. I sometimes said, hey, guys, can I announce start of a phase one or whatever you're doing? They say, well, no, we only want to do this when it's completed. So we have to be patient, and we have to honor that they have their own IR needs. But I can assure you that there is activity on all these ends.
Okay, thank you very much.
Thank you. And our next question comes from the line of Dennis Hulme from Edison. Please go ahead with your question.
Hi, good afternoon. Thanks for taking my question. Just also in relation to Japan, if the pre-NDA meeting goes ahead in the first quarter of next year and it goes as you'd expect, do you think you'd be in a position to file in the second half, or might it take longer to prepare the dossier?
At the moment, you hear me taking a deep breath. We have not completely absorbed everything that is in the ONO file, because some of this is Japanese. So we guess that we can, that we could file in the second half, subject to that we are able to understand everything that's there in Japanese. So right now, everything is in 200 and something boxes, and we have people who look at this so that we identify gaps that we have identified on the IT side. So this is work in progress. But yes, it is the intention to move on to filing in the second half if there is no, let's say, substantial demand for additional work coming from this meeting.
Okay, thank you. That's all from me.
Thank you. So, ladies and gentlemen, just as a reminder, if you'd like to ask a question, please press *1 on your telephone keypads now. We have another question coming through from the line of Christian Glennie from Edison. Please go ahead, sir.
Hi, thanks for taking the follow-up. Just a bit of clarity on the on your financial guidance. Obviously, you talk about sufficient cash as it stands today to complete the phase three programs in the US and Europe. Is that correct in terms of getting the data from those studies? So that's effectively into the first half of 2017. Is that correct?
Yes, absolutely. I can confirm that. So we have sufficient cash. Only the cash at hand is sufficient to conduct the trials. And where we have some leeway to, you know, increase and trim down is the selling expenses, but we make sure that we have the development covered because this is priority number one.
Okay, thank you. And then just finally on the you talk about the exclusivity as it stands today, at least into 2027. Just a bit more on that in terms of whether that's U.S. and or Europe, and also what that relates to in terms of IP.
Yes, that relates to the patent on the salt form that we're using, A, and B, on the 10-year exclusivity that we get in Europe on document after filing. And the additional prospects lie in our formulation patent, which have been filed and would give us additional protection beyond 2030.
Okay, thank you very much.
Thank you. And we have a question coming through from the line of Simon Schlosser from First Berlin. Please go ahead with your question.
Yes, Simon Schools. Good afternoon. You mentioned an extra add-on in price discussions in Japan, but I missed the ensuing argument. I was wondering if you could enlarge on that further.
Extra add-on?
In price discussions in Japan.
Yes. Well, what I meant is if the PMDA wants us to do something extra that we do not foresee right now, that could have an impact. That's at least what I meant. I also
right. Okay.
That right now there's an unknown. We have nothing specific. But if you are on the high sea and if you go to see authorities, you have to have strong faith.
Okay. Thanks very much.
Thank you. And we currently have no further questions coming through. So one final reminder, ladies and gentlemen. If you'd like to ask a question, please press star 1 on your telephone keypad. Okay, there are no further questions, so I will hand you back to your host for any concluding remarks. Thank you.
Thank you very much for your kind questions. And again, I would like to thank everybody for joining us for PAION's earnings call on the results of the first 9 months of 2015. I hope that we have been able to answer your questions, but please feel free to give me a call afterwards. If you would like to listen to this call again, please visit the investor section of our website, where the dial-in details will be posted later today with an MP3. For now, I say goodbye and thank you very much for your continued interest in PAION.
Thank you for joining today's conference call. You may now replace your handsets. Thank you.